brilliant parish this is, because I'm looking for my stand and for my preaching notes, and they're already here. Will you pray with me? God, be in my head and in my understanding. God, be in my heart and in my feelings. God, be in all our heads and in our hearing. Well, the fact is, I'm really excited to be preaching today. I know this sounds a bit bizarre, but I'm so excited about what is happening in our church these days. Is he nuts? I hear you think. Doesn't he know that attendances are low and we're all having a hard time paying our bills? Well, some of you here have known me for a long time and have probably already formed your own views as to whether I'm nuts or not. I'm sure you'll let me know what you think, but not now. Later, over coffee. But before I explain this craziness, let us ground ourselves in Scripture and see where we go from there. Jesus said, "You are salt of the earth." We are the salt of the earth. It's hard for us to imagine how valuable salt was back in those days. For us, salt is really something that restaurants use too much of in their servings to hide the fact that the processed foods that they offer us don't have any flavor. But before the introduction of refrigeration, which was only 100 years ago, salt was used to preserve foods. If you couldn't preserve food beyond the first few days, the chances are that you would run out of food and starve. So salt of the earth by no means is faint praise. Jesus is saying we are incredibly precious. We are vital. You are the light of the world. You've heard it said, haven't you, that someone lights up the room when they walk into it. Jesus says that we followers of the light light up the whole world by just being, by just existing. You can't get any more special than that. But Jesus emphasizes that we do have to do constant maintenance. If you don't take the trouble to store the salt properly, it can get contaminated and lose its value. If you hide your light away so that no one can see it, it's obviously useless. And those of you who have listened to me ramble on, yea, these many years, know that it's been a big concern for me as our neighbors out there have less and less experience of who we are and what we do in this place. We do and have continually hidden our light under a bushel basket. When I was in seminary, I had this running battle with one of the profs who insisted that the church didn't need to be relevant, that the church was about building up people's faith. My argument was, and still is, that if folks don't see the church as relevant, they won't join. And if they're not even here, how can we possibly help them to build up their faith? The prophet Isaiah comes at this from a slightly different perspective. In the passage that Tracy read for us today, God answers the people who are complaining again, because that's what the people did. I hesitate to say whether that's what the people do. They said, "Why do we fast and you do not see, God? Why do we humble ourselves, but you do not even notice?" And fasting here is really a sample, an example of any spiritual practice that people use to get closer to God. But God replies, "Look, You serve your own interest on your fast day. You offer service, but only on your own terms. You still oppress all your workers. So you fast only to quarrel and to fight and to strike with a wicked fist. And for me, that line is the very definition of Christian nationalism, the heresy that we're confronted with. So Isaiah is emphasizing that however impressive our worship or our prayer life or our other spiritual practices are, and indeed, isn't it wonderful that here at St. Dunstan's our worship and through the center our participation in a range of spiritual practices is exceptional. But however brilliant a job we're doing in that regard, Isaiah reminds us that worship and spiritual practice are not an end in themselves. They are not the end in themselves. Their purpose, he says, is to equip and empower us to do God's work in the world. Is this not, he says, he writes, is this not the fast that I choose? To loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the thongs of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house? I stumbled across this poem written by Rob Hardy that only came out in the last few days. It's called Communion. There's no bread. The bakers have gone into hiding. The seats at the table are empty. The 12 are out marching with the thousands. The streets are filled with a new song. Only Judas sits at the Target Plaza, counting his silver, while Pontius Pilate issues a carefully worded statement. Meanwhile, the centurions have quotas to fill. But out on the streets, there's a communion. Jesus takes the city in his hands and says, "This is my body, broken for you." And so finally, we come to why I'm so excited about what's happening in the church today. After so many years, I believe, of hiding our light under a bushel basket, I am seeing church leaders actively doing what God asked us to do as laid out today by Isaiah. We're actually seeing clergy on the front lines of resistance to the injustice and cruelty being perpetrated in Minneapolis and elsewhere in the United States. And of course, there are a full range of faith leaders coming together there, different Christian denominations, Jews, Muslims, Buddhist monks, and others, which in itself is a wonderful thing. But I'm especially proud that people very much like us Anglicans, people from our sister church, the Episcopal Church, are front and center in this resistance. Remember, it was Episcopal Bishop Marianne Buddy who first called out for grace and mercy to Trump's face at the moment of his inauguration. Craig Lawyer, who is the Episcopal Bishop of Minnesota, has been out in the streets leading vigils where he reminded people that early Christians like Paul and Silas were persecuted for, and the charge was, turning the world upside down. He preached, "For those of you outside of Minnesota, it is hard to overstate the magnitude of cruelty we are seeing, and the magnitude and the depth of fear that nearly everyone is living with all the time. And what the forces of evil and meanness in the world want is for us to stay there. The forces of evil that we promise to resist in our baptismal vows." Anybody remember their baptismal vows? One of the vows is, will you persevere in resisting evil? Would you persevere in resisting evil? The forces of evil want us to meet anger with anger, hatred with hatred. And beloved, we are not, he says, we are not going to do that. We're going to make like our ancient ancestors and turn the world upside down by mobilizing for love. We are going to disrupt with Jesus' hope. We are going to agitate with Jesus' love. Jesus was right. The good people of Minneapolis and their faith leaders are the very light of the world at this time. But they are folks just like us. Because we've seen clergy, men and women of God, beaten, pepper-sprayed, handcuffed. So much so that the Bishop of New Hampshire, Rob Hirschfeld, urged his clergy to put their affairs in order and write their wills, because they might find themselves putting their lives on the line. And if that does seem a little extreme, isn't that actually what Jesus did for us? Greater love has no one than to lay down their life for their friends. Surely Renee Good, and especially Alex Pretty, are precisely martyrs for our times. Presiding Bishop Sean Rowe, the equivalent of our primate in the Anglican Church here, has written, "In the United States, we no longer live in a time when we can expect to practice our faith without risk. Peaceful protests, a right long enshrined in the Constitution, are now made deadly. Carrying out the simple commands of Jesus, feeding the hungry, caring for the sick, visiting prisoners, making peace, now involves risks for the church and grave dangers for those we serve. As Christians, we must acknowledge that this chaos and division is not of God, and we must commit ourselves to paying whatever price our witness requires of us." Now, am I justifying the horrors that are being inflicted on people just to make the church look good? Well, of course not. But what we're seeing is indeed awful and horrifying and, yes, frightening. I suspect we're all like Frodo in The Lord of the Rings, who said, "I wish none of this had happened in my lifetime." To which Gandalf replied, "So do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given us." How many of you have read The Lord of the Rings? Okay, some of you. Let me recommend it. At times like this, you need the Bible in one hand and Lord of the Rings in the other hand. Seriously, not the movies, that's a different thing, but the book, please. Read it. It's just that it seems to have taken these events as a wake-up call to make us stand up and show what the love of God really looks like. We may have been lulled into thinking that evil is not real, but Sauron is back. Satan is still doing his thing all around us. So I'm excited, because our church is no longer hiding its light under a bushel, but is loudly proclaiming the gospel in resistance to the evil of the MAGAs and the other extremist groups. We're even seeing that heresy of Christian nationalism being called out, because it doesn't match up to the true gospel of Jesus Christ. Something that probably should have been done a while ago, but we were too busy being nice like Christians. And if you believe that this doesn't really affect us because it's only happening in the United States, I've got a condo in Florida to sell you. Apparently, they're going really cheap right now. May I invite you to take your bulletin home today? And if you don't have one with you, grab one. Because in that, we can read our own Bishop John's letter about the evil of denialism in relation to residential schools. Please share that letter with your family and friends, whether they see themselves as Christians or not. And again, I'm excited to see our bishop speaking publicly about the Christian response to the evil in our own midst. My friends, and some of you know Cecilia Ricci, was at the 1BC event at UBC a couple of weeks ago. What she saw was the denialist agents of evil doing everything they could to provoke a confrontation. Exactly the same as Trump and his minion strategy in the United States. I was hoping Cecilia might be with us today because I wanted to take the opportunity to apologize to her publicly for not going to stand beside her on that day. Because that's what Isaiah and my baptismal vows say I should have done. The point here is that exactly like our brothers and sisters in the south, to the south of us, we do have to decide how we are going to act in such times. Because what is being demonstrated around us is that the time for hiding our light under a bushel basket is past. It's time to shine our light in this darkness. Quite simply, that the gospel of Christ couldn't be more relevant in these turbulent times.